Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we take a sort of linguistic philosophy approach to miracles and nutrition until both of them end up sounding and seeming nonsensical to us. Nutrition, nutrition, nutrition. Here we stand at the junction of reason and nonsense, at the crossroads, learning to play a non-existent guitar. Oh, my friend, I'm so glad you're with me. All I want and all I can give you is companionship. What is companionship? Companionship is one of those wonderful jobs where you walk in to the interview, and before you can even open your mouth, you got the job. Say, oh, just the fact that you showed up, I like the cut of your jib. Don't open your mouth. You might wreck it. So far, you're hired. Oh, and you got a raise. No, you don't have a raise because it's not one of those jobs that pays. Did you ever have an interview for a non-paying job and think, I could be farming? Oh my goodness, the lengths at which we put ourselves to be accepted, to fit in and all. And here, friend, you got nothing to worry about. You instantly fit in for a lot of reasons. A, I can't see you, so I can't judge you. Isn't that wonderful? It's like a courtroom where the judge is on the other side of a 12-foot concrete wall. So he can't see me, doesn't know me. I just judge you based on the rest of humanity. Uh-oh, that's not good. I don't want to follow that act. Oh, it's so hard to be a human being because so many of us mess it up for the others. It's like having the last name Johnson Penny. And then somebody named Johnson Penny does something horrid and you go, all Johnson Pennies aren't like that. I can understand that, but my dealings with them have been horrible. Just horrible. Oh my goodness. I don't want to say that a whole family of people is evil. But really, some of it is their genetic ability to shoot fiery acid out of their nose, which I find a little bit off-putting. Oh, my friends, I'm sending out a message. That's my job here. I'm not qualified to do anything. I'm putting out a message in a bottle. But my message is me, and I shrink myself down. I get in the bottle and send myself out. Now, this is very much like a children's story that I wrote years ago, and it did not get published. It was about two little children who shrink down very small and put themselves into a bottle, and then a giant puts a cork in it and throws them out to sea, and then the story follows their interaction together in their last hours before they suffocate because there's no air in the bottle. So, oh, that sounds terrible. Oh, my goodness, but that's life, isn't it? It has an expiration date. Life has an expiration date, or is it a use-by date? It's not clear. So is this expired catsup or one of them, mayonnaise or one of that? Or is that a use-by date, say freshest by this date? It's a curve. Does it drop off? It's like a viral or bacterial load. At what point am I sick? Oh, yes, it's all gradations, isn't it? And what grade are you? I'm glad we don't have to take tests now, say, what grade are you doing work at? My math would come in elementary school. Really, I'm afraid, and I'm glad I don't have to do anything like build bridges or anything. Crossing them, for me, I feel, is an accomplishment. Isn't that funny? Some of us can design bridges. Some of us can build them. I find the ones that can build them easiest are those race of giants that we have that can pick up 1,000 pounds with one hand. Do we still have them? I've been living, I think I've lived millions of lives. Most of them as tiny little creatures crawling on something slimy, crawling on the ground. As Coleridge would say, shut up and listen to my poetry. Oh, and he would also say, oh, the slimy creatures that would crawl, and so did I, and so did I. Oh, poets, I think poetry shows us more of what life is like. Say, life is like a story, Hardy. It is, but that's not right, though, because everybody keeps dying before they get to the end. So it must be like a poem. A poem is one of those things that if somebody's reading it out loud, they got to let you know when they're done because it's not obvious, like a story, you know. So that's what's more like poetry. It's like a series of slides. I think it's like looking at someone's vacation slides out of order. Now we're on a boat on the water. Now we're sitting at a picnic table somewhere. That's all I have in memories are snapshots. I take it for granted that it's all filled in with something, but I do not remember. Oh, I love meeting you, friend. I say, I remember. I don't remember your face or your name, but give me a clue about something that happened when we met. Like a picture dropped off the wall, and I went, how about that? Was that you? Oh, I like it when you're stamped into my memory, when you're etched in there. Back in the caveman days, the Hanna-Barbera caveman days, on the Flintstones, a camera consists of a bird inside making a physical etching, an interpretation, if you will, of what he sees. Now, philosophers now tell us that this is the way that light works. You say, why philosophers, not scientists? Well, I don't know. I can understand it more easily when philosophers say, because there's no numbers. Again, I have a hard time calculating a tip. And to build a bridge, you have to calculate a tip in all different, bunch of different languages with X's in there. Be like this. You go to a restaurant. What's my bill? Your bill is XY minus 10 to the negative 13. You say, well, what? Yes. Now, figure out the tip on that. I'd be there all day. I'd be so embarrassed. You know what I would do? I would quietly leave my watch and walk out and say, I don't know. It's everything I have. Oh, what is the most precious thing that you have, friend? Are you wearing the Hope Diamond? Or are you hoping to wear diamonds? Gosh, I wish I had a turn of phrase like that. I wish I had the gift of speech. I could just open my mouth and out would come poetry. But that's not what happens to me. Why is that? I believe that my brain, there's something wrong with it. It used to be different in school. I must have had a different brain or something, and my head was a different shape. I think what's happened now is that my head has continued to grow, and now my brain is small proportionately. You see what I'm saying? It seems so much bigger. It's like when you're a child, and you say, this house seems so big. Now that I'm grown, it seems so small. My intellect is just like that. Oh, if we could go back to the days, say, I had such hope and promise. Oh, the awards that I used to win in school for jumping. I jumping up and down, jumping forward, jump the highest up, forward, sideways, diagonal jumping. I had a ribbon in, all sorts of things. Played all sorts of instruments like the kazoo and the recorder fluently. Enough to be in, I was in several bands with them. I don't want to brag. No, I'm not bragging. Gosh, I wish I had studied something seriously. You see these child progenies. Oh, you see, now I don't know which it is. Prodigy. And playing, piano? Or there's one now, the fella has a clarinet. There must be. Or a lot of singers, young singers on the internet say, listen, this little baby sounds like Adele. It does. It sounds just like Adele. Oh, singing. Is our singing evolving? Can people sing louder and better now or something, or more on key than they could in the past? Our music is something that's embedded in our culture, much the same way as a fence wire is embedded in a tree that grew around it. Or something is embedded, I don't know, in your leg. Someone stabbed a pencil in there as a youth, and you can still see the graphite. Is it embedded that way? I'm going to do some... Oh, everybody loves folk music. That's the name of one of my old folk albums that I have. I don't have any folk albums. I just play. I have a very rich imagination life. Fantasy life. Fantasy has gotten a bad name now because of movies and the internet. But it used to just mean, I sit around and I imagine that I have a beautiful mansion and I invite everybody there for tea and I'm wearing a green suit, things like that. That's what my fantasies are very, I think, pedestrian in that I fantasize I'm crossing the street over and over and over again. Oh, my goodness. Sometimes I'm walking under the street like it's an Escher etching. Now, I picked up my ukulele. Oh, the ukulele is a wonderful folk instrument. Isn't it from Hawaii? Well, the word is. But it's really just a tiny guitar. And we have had tiny guitars since the Portuguese sailed to Indonesia and uncovered Homo floresiensis, the tiny little hobbit people of ancient Indonesia. And they would see the Portuguese playing their guitar, playing their I don't know what like that, and they'd say, "Oh, we wish we had guitars like that." And there was a Portuguese sailor, and his name was I can't pronounce it. It's all J's and vowels. And he said, "I'm going to make you a tiny guitar out of this." I was making a coffin for myself, just like Ishmael and Moby Dick, or Queequeg, rather. Ishmael eventually used it to save his life, ironically. But Queequeg was making a coffin. I was making a coffin, but I'm going to take the wood apart because you know what? Guess what it is? Ash. And I'm going to make a tiny guitar out of it for you. And then your people can do that, can tune their guitars right in front of you, like. And he made the guitar, and he made the strings out of the, guy says, "I need guts," and he might have murdered one of the little people, just for the guts, but to this day, they've still got enough intestines to make guitar strings for all those people, there's none of those people left, even, but that's why they call them gut strings, or gut, or guitar. Guitar strings. But you'll notice that other people's music sometimes, we're used to a certain. "For Making Whoopee." That's a song, "Making Whoopee" by Yoko Ono. And we're familiar with things like that, but people from other cultures. That's what it sounds like to us. Like, "Oh, what are you just making noises or something?" I'm not mocking, by the way. I'm just saying to the untrained ear, when someone from one culture hears someone from another culture's music, they just hear nonsense like that sometimes. And I wonder, what if you took somebody from another planet or from far away on an island and expose them to Peter, Paul, and Mary, would they then hold it against us? Would they think, "Oh, we're never going to have anything to do with those people. Listen to that." Because they got it right or they got it wrong, their interpretation of it. That's the thing. Oh, my goodness. If someone dislikes you or distrusts you, do they have it wrong or do they have it right? Hi, I'm Hardy White. And I'm here to tell you how to train an animal. Well, why would I want to train an animal? Well, let's say that I was heartless and I was opening a circus. I'd say, "Well, I'd like to capture some beautiful creatures and make them do my bidding. How do I get an animal to do my bidding?" Oh, first of all, we'll be patient with them because they learn based on your behavior. If you're always mean to them, they're going to come to fear you too much. So you want to maybe reward them with little nubbits. I don't know what kind of animal you're going to get, so I don't know what kind of chow you're going to get, but I know there's a corporation that probably makes little pellets to feed your captive animal. Oh, if they made pellets to feed captive humans, what would they be? Sliders, I think. Those are like human pellets. I'm keeping a human now, and I got to get these sticky sliders. I just get them frozen from White Castle. Oh, my goodness. Culture has a lot to do with the things. I don't know who I'm speaking to, so I don't know if I make a joke about a certain Dish, for instance, in Kentucky, where I currently reside, there's a certain dish called hot brown. Oh, you're giggling already. Yes, and it's very descriptive. Except it's not really super, it's not super brown. You could make a argument that it's the cheese and all, it's more, not yellow, really. What's a horrible, it's ochre. But it is, so it's a kind of melted cheese on, I don't know what's in there, turkey or bacon. Or, it's delicious, really, and it's all baked up, and it's really bad for you. But it's hot brown. Oh, would they eat that on other planets? Would Peter, Paul, and Mary ever have it? I hope not. But this is something that they eat around here. Is it alien to me? Oh, where are you from? And so if I was going to make a joke about it, you'd get it if you were from here, but not necessarily if you were from Miniarchum or one of those countries. I don't want to say a specific country. I don't want to single it out. I don't know who's listening, my friend, but I hope my voice is going out on the air and it's floating there. Like a giant child. What if a big giant child, and I'm talking about the size of one of the space vehicles in one of these space movies, came down, and as a child, not a good-looking child or anything, it's got its noses running and everything, and it's crying and everything, and it floats down from the sky, and it screams at us some demand, just like a real child would have. Feed me or change me. How would we react? Oh, giant child in the sky. These are the things we dream of. Does that make them possibilities? I wonder. If things could happen. When dreams happen, are there like sort of counterfactual dreams? Are there dreams you didn't have? Possibilities. I wonder. I wonder about the course that my life has taken. I don't know how old you are, whether you're five or, well, if you're five, you're not really understanding most of the show. I don't know if you're five or 50 or 500. I don't know what your life has been like. I don't know what your experience has been. I don't know what language you speak. Perhaps you don't speak English, in which case this appeal will mean nothing to you. And I might as well just make sounds. I'm trying to express my feelings in sounds. Is music a universal language? No. I could play you a song of a people from an island in the Pacific, and you would say, is that a sad song or a happy song? You might not know. Sad music and happy music might sound the same, depending on which you're told, in context. What story have you heard? All our lives are based on books, I believe. Some of them are religious books, and that's how people see the world, based on the characters in their religious book. Others, our worldviews are based on works of fiction, so that we see all characters as a character in Don Quixote. Others, lives are based on books that have not been written and which are contained only in their head. And so when we encounter them, we may be playing a role in a story that we've never heard of. And we have no idea what we mean to them. Do you ever wonder that when you meet people and say, who are they seeing? I have a long white beard. Now, this says a lot of things to people. I instantly lose my individuality and become an icon. So I walk up to people and they say, all right, do you hunt ducks or do you bring presents? Now, which is, what does the beard mean? What is the meaning of the beard? And I say, well, you know, I can lie to you and say, oh, heck, I just don't shave. You know, what do you want the beard to mean? And so I thought about it long and hard. Why do I have this beard if people are going to make assumptions about me? And I think, well, I also have rosacea. So I was thinking, well, maybe I just have a fair mild. What do I want them to mistake me for? Either that ruddy fella or maybe wise. Oh, maybe perhaps he's wise. is why he has the long white beard. It's a sign of wisdom. Also, they say long earlobes are a sign of wisdom. How about that? I think that's because your ears and your nose keep growing as you age. Did you know this? You say, when you see older people say, man, that fella's ears are giant. They weren't always like that. It's like, oh, he must have been a funny looking kid. No, they just keep growing. You know, they keep getting bigger and danglier and everything. And your nose, too. That giant schnoz was not on an 8-year-old. Don't worry. Isn't that funny? They keep growing. I don't need things to keep growing when I'm old. I don't need bigger ears. I can hear just fine. I can smell just fine. And when you perish and they put your body in the grave, things continue to grow. Your hair continues to grow. Your fingernails continues to grow. And your reputation continues to grow because you are a vampire. Hello, I'm Harty White, and welcome to Scary Stories to Go to Bed By and then feel vaguely nauseous in the middle of the night from worry. There once was a man who lived alone in a castle. That's scary enough, so I'm going to use the rest of the time to tout some new product that I've been introduced to. Hi, I'm Harty White. I would like you to take your trust in me and then transfer that to a product. That's how good this product is. I haven't decided what it is yet. I don't want to sell you anything. I sort of do, but nothing big. I mean, like a stick of candy or something like that. Like if I was working at a store and you came in, I'd say I'd be happy to sell you something. I love it that you're here. Best of both worlds. We get to visit and I can sell you something, and hopefully it's something you need. Like a fancy mustard. What fancy mustard can I get you today? Tell me the kind of meal you have, and I'll try to pair it with a fancy mustard. Because they're all different. Some are nutty, some are fruity. This one, I think, what am I tasting? I like to just lick regular objects like a pen or something. And then I'll go, stone fruit. And people go, wow, you're a great taster. So yeah, I'm a master distiller at a local whiskey place. So really? No. There are people though that taste and smell and sense for a living. Either their vision is very, very good, or their hearing is very, very good, or their sense of smell and taste is very, very good, or perhaps their sense of touch is very, very good. I'm a silk tester. I'm good. That's soft enough. I'm gonna test toilet tissue. Because I'm a super feeler. I am not. And I'll tell you, there's two things. I've lifted weights in my life, and I've played guitar. So parts of my hands are very calloused, but not the part from work or where you hold a tool or anything. Those are just like a baby. So I have combination hands, and I don't know what kind of cold cream or hand lotion to use. Hi, I'm Harty White. Ow, I tell you what, aloe, I'm just going to go out and gather all the things I need together in a backpack. What are all the things you need in life? Boil it down for me. Friend, put out a how-to book. Harty, tell me everything I need. What kind of desk do I need? Well, what kind of work are you going to be doing? Light work? Get a medium desk. What about a roll-top desk? I don't think you're going to need one for what you're doing. So if you said, I'm going to be a journalist in 1920, I would say go with a roll top and perhaps one of them really super old typewriters. If we picked what era we lived in, oh my goodness, I think it'd open up commerce a bit, wouldn't it? So, look at all the market for so many things. But products, designs become obsolete because fashions change, because tastes change. You know what I'm saying? I can't keep For some reason, the shape of my head, I can't keep glasses on my head, and they fall off all the time. I need the kind of wire ones. They're uncomfortable, but go behind your ear. It's just going to have to be a trade-off. I need those, and they don't really super make them the way they used to. And I need something like that. I also need a milk churn, and I need something to chase away some sort of demons. I don't know. It should be made of silver. And those are probably available, but only as curios, not in your corner store like they used to be available. When I was a young man, I'd go grocery shopping with my grandmother. I liked to watch her buy pork chops and lamb chops. It was mostly lamb chop. Boy, she loved a good lamb chop. That she would just keep those for herself, though. And I would go with her, and every once in a while, the grocery store had a wonderful promotion. Now, they had green stamps all the time, and my grandmother would collect those. So young people say, what are those? Green stamps are just like, what would we say today? Bitcoins. I don't even think that's a good analogy. But they'd give you stamps, and they'd say, save up these stamps, put them in a book, and then you can buy something rickety. Yes! And it worked, because people love to collect and build over time. So I finally got enough. I get a free bag of dog food. But I went because occasionally they have something better than that. They would have maybe an encyclopedia series. Children's encyclopedia books with all sorts of cartoons. Now, I loved learning like that through cartoons. I like any sort of book that purports to tell me everything I need to know about life, everything there is, A to Z, and a picture of it. That's how I want to see it. Show me that. And when I was young, I thought such a series of books exists. There is a compendium of knowledge, and I merely consult it. And there is a portrait of all the important people who've ever lived. And they just happen to be bearded white men with stern looks on their face. And they all have the same mental illness or addiction or something. But they all had that, you know, at least it was a worldview. And they had pictures. And, oh, look at that. And I didn't realize, you know, how strange and what a skewed, narrow view of the world these encyclopedias were. And I started looking at even older ones, and you see people's weird ideas and prejudices, and they're just the wrong philosophies reflected in the very books they made. And I thought about that, and I thought, has that stopped? Or do we just always blissfully live in a soup of assumptions and ignorance? And think, oh my goodness, the future's going to look back at us like we're idiots. Yes, idiots looking back on idiots, looking back on idiots. How's everything ever get accomplished? Oh my word, how did we ever make it to the moon? And I'll tell you, if we hadn't gone to the moon, if we didn't know about black holes and all, then how could we, I don't know. I don't know what the lack of knowledge was like. Were things worse, better, same? No, we'll never know. You'll be dead and you'll never know. This is why I'm so focused on the present, focused on the present, focused on the present. I'm convinced that if everybody on earth can at the same time have one moment of joy at the same moment, that the whole world would be like jumping up and down, jumping up at the perfect time in an elevator. Everybody jumps at once on earth and we all float. Oh, is that a wild dream? How can anything be far-fetched in this crazy world? Are you living the same life, friend? Are you living the same life that you think there's any kind of distinction between fantasy and reality? Look out at that reality so strange and baffling. Oh my goodness. And I tell you what, not everything I imagine is true. Some of them are fears. Some of them are crazy things. Some of them are ghosts and imaginary and they aren't real. And some of the things I imagine, though, are wonderful. And those I want to be real. Oh, those I hope are real. And they may be. Don't be discouraged, friends. Don't be discouraged. Don't imagine that future. And anyway, it's going to happen regardless. I'm just saying, it could change your perspective a little. Are you asking me to put on rose-colored glasses, Hardy? Yes. Yeah, I don't know. Yes, I guess so. So I guess the first step to changing things is to delude yourself that they could be changed. You know, all crazy endeavors are crazy. Oh, bless you. I just want, really, here's my goal, I think. I learned this a long time ago when I saw results of my standardized tests. So what could possibly be your mission on this earth, Hardy? And then a voice said to my head, you don't have any mission, fool. Okay. Think of something important then. What's important? What's important to you? And say, man, I tell you, I don't know. When you ask me my happiest time, it's elusive. I can give you some times I think maybe in hindsight are happy. But I mean, at the time, maybe I thought when I was having all those drinks at that party, that was the happiest moment, and it may be. And the fact that it was followed by violent vomiting has clouded it for me, and it's no longer the happiest. But perhaps, it really was. So I don't know. All the happiness I judge in hindsight, I really don't know what it is. I really don't know. But I can tell you this. I think I'm defining it by the absence of suffering and pain. Because I can't accurately remember that. I can't feel the pain when I remember it, but I can tell you those instances when things were horrible. Those have stuck with me. Those are far more memorable, I think. And so I guess what I'm saying is I'm for avoiding those things, and I am trying to create a distraction. You know how on I Love Lucy, when they're going to go in and rob a bank because they got a gambling debt, and Lucy says, all right, Viv, you create a distraction, and I'll go in and rob that so she doesn't get hurt. Create a distraction. That's what I'm trying to do, is create a distraction from war. Create a distraction from prejudice. Create a distraction from all that hatred and fear. Just look at me. Just for 2 seconds, look over here, because while you're looking, you can't do nothing wrong. But keep everybody distracted, perhaps. They'll take their fingers off the buttons of destruction. Oh, my friends, it's time to stand up and clap. So I don't feel like standing up and clap. That's brilliant, because I was thinking of taking a nap. I'm exhausted talking to you. It's all I want to do is speak to my fellow man. And then, I think, can't we drive in silence for a minute? Isn't that beautiful to sit with someone in silence? Yes, that's what you're thinking, because it's really like you're trapped. I feel like you have your foot trapped, and I'm sitting here until the help gets here, roughly an hour. And then the help will get here and say, okay, thank you for keeping me distracted and making time drag, but still, oh, I'd do it again for you. I was thinking of cutting your foot off, but then I thought, I got a captive audience, and I'm just gonna have that right there. Captive audience. I've actually had one time. My band years ago played in a prison, a show. I don't remember too much. I just remember saying, all right, and that was Rock the Boat by the Hughes Corporation. And I think they clapped politely. But it was meaningless to me because nobody really wanted to be there. I mean, they had a choice to go see the concert, but they were all being incarcerated against their will. Oh, you're trapped in a prison sometimes. When I was little and I'd go out with my family, there was two different things that would happen. Sometimes I would love to be in a group and say, oh, these people, I'm so proud of everybody. And other times you go out with family and you think you want to tell the world, I don't know, I'm not responsible for these folks. I'm being held a virtual captive. I'm not allowed to leave. That's why I have to sit at the same table as they are. Oh, my goodness, our family. It's like a magnet when we're little. It's like we're stuck to them. And sometimes if we don't feel like they think the same way we do or have the same ideas, it can be so hard. So I don't want people to think that I'm an idiot because my mother is slapping the maitre d' right now, which is something I wouldn't do. And it happens to us even as adults. So you're sitting there with a friend does something, plays the fool, and you think, should I be loyal? I mean, I love my friend, but I really don't want to, have to pay the price for his idiocy. Isn't that tough? It's tough. Oh, my goodness. Here's the answer. If you have friends, don't be an idiot, because it puts them in an awkward position. That's it. My message is to the idiot, not to the friend. Friend, you're right to feel torn. idiot, don't be an idiot. Oh, I tell you, your behavior affects those who love you. Your behavior affects your family and everybody. Oh, lighten your heart, you fool, come on. Oh, there's real difficulty, real reasons to feel bad, real suffering. Look all around you. Oh, my goodness. Don't be stinky to people. Be gentle with them. Open your eyes. Don't be threatened by them. They're not trying to get heady in traffic or anything. You're just all right. Get off your own back, and maybe you'll get off mine. Like a monkey, like an M.C. Escher monkey on its own back. Is that possible? Yes. Just like I've seen Popeye the Sailor Man will bend down, put his head through his legs, and then up, it'll come up through his back. Honest to gosh, his torso will follow, and he'll do this kind of, it's not possible in real life, but it's possible in art to do that, to flip yourself inside out, to have some insight, to open your head and take a look around. Let's peel back the layers of our mind and see what's there. And you go, oh, the blood, I can't see for the blood. Hardy, what have you done? You've opened up a can of brain. I have, and it's everywhere. Oh, my goodness. I believe that free thought isn't like opening up a can of worms, but it's like popping open a biscuit tube, because you're not going to put it back in. Once your biscuit dough has swollen, you can get it back in a cardboard can, because you've risen. You've risen up because yeast produces gas. Use your gas to make it light. It is gas that makes bread light. It is gas and yeast that fills your heart with joy, filled with joy. And I will sing until I'm blue in the face. I've already done it. I've sung to the blues. You know, I was constricting my voice instead of breathing properly the way you are. Let's take a big, deep breath of air. Oh. Now, would you drink soup that some friend of yours has been sitting in naked? Because that's what air is. We take into our lungs not only fresh air, but we also take in the breath of others. That's why we get sick. We are all more connected than you know. We may not be connected by a fleshy band like we're yin and yang, the Siamese twins from North Carolina. I don't want to get their names wrong. I know that's not their names, but I don't want to get them wrong. But we are connected by molecules that we can't see, and even more so by atoms. Isn't that, now you're getting airy-fairy, weary-wildy, wishy-wishy, wushy-wushy, aren't you? Be more concrete. I'll tell you what concrete is. My grandfather built a garage, a suburban garage next to his suburban house with his own two hands and help of friends. Granted, there's no plumbing involved, but I was very proud of him for it happened before I was born. It's not a big deal. People did that. It's not a big deal, thinking back. But he had all the stuff delivered and built a garage. That's pretty good. Did some carpentry. I guess it's like a cinder block one. I don't know. Think it's neat. Still, I think it's neat. You got to be handy to do that. Have some skill. I was so proud of my family when I got older. And then I got to my teens and I was ashamed of everybody. You know, because I was comparing this to other people in the world and saying, oh, my family's not very smart. None of them went to college. I felt ashamed that they were uneducated. I felt ashamed that they would say silly things or have, you know, and they weren't all noble. Sometimes I'd be ashamed that they wanted people to think they had more money than they had or something. They were fronting or whatever. And that'd make me ashamed. So it's not like they were completely noble or anything. I mean, they did things that might make you feel ashamed. But when did my love and my understanding conquer that? When I started to see what an idiot I was. That's it. See yourself for who you are. Some of you make it up. Do you ever, there's a type of person that comes home from taking a test at school and says, I got a D or an F. And they know damn well they did not. All right? They think they got an A. And you know what? They got a B. Now, what's the lesson right there, Hardy? There's some people that beat up on self, say, I'm nobody, I'm nothing. And what it's a cover for is them thinking they're an A+, when they're gone and they're afraid they're going to get a D or an F. And then they can't accept that, yes, they did pass, but not by as much as they think they did. So stop putting yourself down thinking it's going to lift you up. Just look at yourself. Say, all right, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. Whatever. And most of people don't realize that until they're dead. I deal with a lot of dead people. And to a person, they say to me, Hardy, I feel such a fool now, for my priorities were messed up. Now that I'm dead, I'm like, why couldn't I just, what did I have to fear? Holy Moses, I made it through death. And here, and then I was like worried about like, oh, am I wearing the right shirt? Or anything like that. You know? And then there's real struggles in the world. I'm just talking to people that maybe are burdening themselves with imaginary ones. Here's something better to imagine. Oh my goodness. Tiny people in my hand. What am I going to do with them? Tiny little people. They must be from the bottle. I've rethought my bottle story. And the giant won't put the cork in there and doom those two little people to their fate. He says, you know what? You don't need to send yourselves out there into the world. That's not going to show anybody anything. When they find that bottle, they're just going to find two little dead bodies. No, 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 no. Get out of that bottle. Go into the world. Your message to the world doesn't have to be direct. It can just, you know, disseminate slowly, dissolve, be that message. You don't have to write a novel. They don't have to remember your song. You don't have to make your mark. You don't have to be a name. You don't have to have a Wiki entry or an IMDb entry. IMDb, am I saying that? International Movement in Bed Base? To be somebody. Everybody's somebody. It's equal. It's like that job. Like I said, you walk in an interview to be a companion. And you sit down, and I say, you got the job. And you say, well, I'm glad I got the job, but I feel like any fool could have gotten the job. And I say, well, yes. And you go, well, that doesn't make me feel special. And I think about it this way. What if everybody on Earth had a PhD, an MD, a law degree, and they had superpowers, all of them equal. So any one of you superheroes is as good as the next. That shouldn't make you feel bad, right? Oh my goodness. What are you saying, friends? Hey, so they're making a feature movie of this radio show. They're going to make, no, they're not. Got all excited. Oh, I knew they would. No, buddy. You can't. I'll tell you what I'm giving. I like to think I'm giving the world a pudding. Not the way the British say it for dessert, but literally pudding, like pudding, gooey. Something that you can't be contained, but can still help you. You know what I'm saying? A sandwich. And you can't sell a sandwich, too. You can sell a sandwich. But there's a certain kind of sandwich you can't sell, right? Kind your granny makes you. It's not really, it's just on white bread and it's made with love, right? But it's not meant to be perfect. It's meant to be good enough. Oh, my friends. I tell you what, as a human being, I can't speak for many people, but I can speak for all the people in my head, in the novel, and the book, and the story in my head. And I got to tell you, the story in my head is not a story. It's a poem. And it's a poem about this. A little boy gets on a boat. He sees the water go by, and he imagines that there's islands, and there are islands. and on the islands are hats made of straw and people with smiling faces. And there are desks in classrooms. And there are rooms in general, and many of them are light green. The little boy doesn't remember being born, but he thinks if he did remember, he'd remember that the room was a strange light shade of green, the kind they have in schools and prisons. Light green that doesn't exist, even on a green planet. Then there are tables. Tables at a restaurant, tables in the convention room at a hotel, tables everywhere, outside and inside, round, square ones, and people sitting there, family members, friends, most of them strangers, most of them relatives, a toast or a bill. Seats, chairs, sitting opposite people, old people, for hours, going to a great aunt's house and sitting there, having the same beautiful conversation over and over again, bringing her up to date on your life. Where are you working now, son? Well, I got a job managing that hardware store I was telling you about. Really? Let me tell you about your cousins that you don't like or care about. And then you sit there and you listen to her because she imagines you're somebody and you imagine she's somebody, but neither of you have it right. Oh, it flashes by, doesn't it? I'm just looking at pictures like in a picture book. I'm just looking at this encyclopedia called Hardy White's Life, H to W, A to Z, soup to nuts. And every book I open has something that seems pertinent, a memory there etched in picture form. But does it mean anything? Does it mean anything? Whenever I see the cream of wheat in the cereal aisle, first of all, I remember the commercial where the bowl is floating around behind the young man's head and he stops quick and the bowl hits him. But I remember eating this a lot as a child. They call it comfort food, I guess. It's mush, it's warm mush, you know. Children have very acute taste buds, and so they don't like some things in the morning. If you don't make a child say, guess what's for breakfast, little child? What? Guess what's for breakfast? We're going to have smoked salmon eggs benedict, and I've kind of deconstructed it, and they're going to scream. Because that's just like telling them, here's some baked vomit or something. No, they don't want that. They want some mush, right? Or they want hot chocolate or something like that. And then as we grow, sometimes our tastes become more sophisticated and we want something complicated in the morning. Like, what do I want? I'm just going to start with some coffee. I don't want to think what I want yet. Why do I always have to think what I want? I don't like going to restaurants for a couple things. I don't like the word order. Can I take your order? No. No. You can't take my order. That's crazy. Sit down. I don't like that. So that weirds me out a little bit. The other thing is a menu. I say, really? I can choose the foods? That doesn't seem completely right to me. You know, like having what if I don't eat? So there's a dead, all these things I assume are already dead, right? You're not killing them to order. So there's like chicken, meat, pork, and everything. So if I get the chicken, the pig and the cow, they stay dead anyway? Come on now. If I was just going over to your house, I'd think, well, maybe they just killed this chicken just now, just for us. Right? But, if I went to somebody's house and they say, okay, we've killed three different animals. Which one do you want? Holy cow. So that's a little strange for me. I say, well, Hardy, just don't eat meat. Hold on there now. Anyway, but still, the variety is strange to me, you know, because even vegetables are things. They take energy, time, and everything to get, you know. If I don't want a cucumber to go to waste either, do I? It could be used for percussion. I've never seen anybody play with any kind of gourds or something. That's not really a gourd, though. You don't want to do that. If I send you for, if I send you the grocery store for a gourd, don't bring me a cucumber. I'm telling you that right now. Oh, my goodness. We'd have so much fun if we were roommates. What if we lived together? Oh, my gosh. It'd be like a sitcom, especially if there was one other person and then the neighbor was, I don't know, Don Knotts. Then Super Duper be like a sitcom, wouldn't it? I wonder. And the reality show, I wish reality shows were real in that nothing happened on them. That it was just absolutely, to watch them, you'd have to really have the attention span of a avant-garde music fan or something. You just be like, did anything happen today on your show? No. They got up, they had some kind of conversation about the weather, talked really super briefly about politics, but nothing really contentious. And then they, you know, talked about just the logistics of their day, like he was going to pick up the kids, and then they left. And that was it for today. And now it's just going to be kind of 8-hour shot of the dog sleeping in the kitchen. Oh, that's a good one, though. Oh, that's life. That's what some people say is life. But who really knows? Oh, I lived a life. How long did you live? I lived to age 5. Oh, okay. But I did a lot. I did a lot. I played with so many little cars. Okay. Well, I guess to you that's a lot, but I drove a bunch of cars. Okay. Can I get back to telling you about my little cars? Go ahead. Someone who lives to 5 lives 100% of their life, don't they? Oh, time. Time makes you anxious and fearful. Time. Oh, but what if there's no difference between 80 years and a year? That would be better, right? Oh, my goodness. How many are you granted? I hope you don't have a religion or philosophy that tells you, you have a certain amount of years granted to you, and if you get sick before that, you're going to feel guilty or bad, like you did something. Why do I not have my 3 score and 10? Why do I not have my 3 score and 10 years? Perhaps I have angered God.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you angered God.
Yeah, you probably did something to make God mad.
I don't think so, man. I think that, just stuff happens and all.
Nope, I think it's punishment. It seems too far-fetched to just have happened.
Yeah, like, go through all the things you've done, all the ethical decisions. Maybe one of them's bad.
No.
Well, just go through all the decisions, and then just assume that those are bad.
Okay, everything I did was wrong that got this outcome. So whatever you did before a bad outcome happened, that must be bad. Oh, that's no way to think, is it? Oh, my goodness. I'm not here to change your thinking. I'm just here to change your heart. Like your heart was a bag in a vacuum and it's picked up too much dust. I'm going to take your heart out back. I'm going to beat the out of it until it's clean-ish. It's never going to be hypoallergenic. Those things aren't meant to be. Your heart's going to pick up all sorts of stuff, and it's going to get a patina of it, of all the gross dirt and accumulation, all the detritus, the grease that comes with experience. It's going to build up on that heart. And you're going to take that heart to the Antiques Roadshow. And they're going, and St. Peter's going to look at that heart. And St. Peter's got a twin brother, St. Leslie. And they're going to look at that heart and they're going to say, I'm glad you didn't clean that heart. I'm glad you didn't scrape all this stuff off of there, because that's what makes it valuable. It has to show that it's been through something. All those things that you think are defects. That's the wonderful. That's like when you sit on a chair for 300 years and just so much butt grease or whatever gets on there that it makes it a really beautiful color, the color of Kentucky Hot Brown. I warned you, so you should have wikied it, so then we got to here, you'd know that, oh, it was a hot brown joke coming. He told me there was. I told you. You know? Bless you. Why does he always say that?
Do you even know what it means? I don't know. I don't know. I just want good things to happen for you. My sort of game theory is this. We all win. Not we're all winners. I mean, somebody wins a game. I don't care. I'll play the game with you. I don't care if you win at Monopoly. We're all winning because we're all playing, as far as I'm concerned. And this game is just happening within a larger framework in which we cooperate. That's where I'll get the snacks. Okay, I'll get the beer, you get the snacks. We sit back down at the game, and yes, we might be competing. But see, on the just zoom out 1 degree, and we're cooperating. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not saying everybody deserves a trophy, right? I'm saying make the distinction between the Monopoly board and the rec room. On the Monopoly board, we compete. In the rec room, we are brothers and sisters. We are friends. We are sharers of goldfish. We are sharers of those little soya crisp things that I don't like. We are sharers of crackers and booze and good times. And we're happy for the winner, and we don't condemn the loser. And we laugh about our experience together in the grand rec room that is whatever analogous thing you need to, I don't know, experience, life, consciousness. I'm absolutely nothing. I really wish, I'm going to put my resume online, I think. Because I think, your endless self-deprecation. It's not self-deprecation. I'm trying to let you know who I am. I'm a failed shop clerk. Really, how could you fail at that? Oh, believe me. I'm so discouraged that I'm so bad at so many jobs. I love working in shops, but I always get so much wrong and the money and everything. See, I like it for the visiting, you know, because people come and go. It's like being at the center of things. I love that. I've always wanted a job like that. So it's, come in, Hardy's there. Always Hardy's there to greet me. I don't want to be a greeter. I don't mean that. I just mean that maybe my desk is where everybody comes in, and we can chat a little bit and have a little hot drink. And I got a little something in a flask in my pocket. Just saying. Oh, my friends. Say, where's all the sound effects, Hardy? Where's all the nutty skits, Hardy? Well, sometimes I just like to talk to you, just you and me, reconnect with another human being. If you think that people can't go all day without talking to another human being, if you think people can't be lonely, even though they live with others, they have others at work, even though they're around other people, sometimes they don't have a level of connection that they really want. You know what I'm saying? And I think, oh my gosh, I've known since I was little that the radio is magic. The radio is not the television. The radio is magical. We can actually almost be together. This is so close. It really is. And it's something that I think sometimes even books can't give you. It's the most magical of mediums. And I wrote this little song called Magical Medium. I don't have enough time. Oh, I'm so glad you were with me. And I hope that you're here all the time, every week, if you need it. But mainly I hope that I cure you to get better and you don't need this show. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Blessed Rockland, Magical County. It fits into his thing in the future. It's going to be really interesting. You're going to see. Oh, my goodness. He's talked about it. Hardy was right. And online, WFMU.org. We can get these past shows. You can write me at HardyWhiteShow@Yahoo.com. You can go look. I got some. That's it, really. That's all. I got nothing else for you except for just a blessing for the week and a thank you from the bottom of my heart.
And you're tuned to the Sinner's Crossroads Gospel Broadcast. Once again, here on WFMU, my name is Kevin Nutt. And we were just listening to the Holy Cross Celestials. A Child Do Love Jesus. The title of the song, as it is written on the record label, the deep maroon record label, Deliverance. Probably from around 1966, around back up in there, the Holy Cross Celestials. And then right before that, we heard the Revelators on the Melron record label, about 1965, and I'm a Rollin'. That's what they were singing about. The Revelators and the Holy Cross Celestials, getting us underway here this evening on Sinner's Crossroads on WFMU. Right now, we're going to get on the gravel road that is the 78 RPM hiss. And we'll start with the Southern Jubilee Quartet on the deluxe record label, Wake Up Nicodemus. That's what they'll be singing, the Southern Jubilee Quartet. Harold Sinner's Crossroads on WFMU.